KO4 Mike Whiskey Yankee. Anybody here?
KO4 MWY, W4 DJW. Nothing heard. W4 DJW clear.
Mike Whiskey Yankee, donor radio check.
KO4 MWY, W4 DJW. I can hear you.
I'm down here. Check. Just set up a little Icon Vic V8000. Just set it up. Antenna in my attic, and just got my Astron 70M and wired everything up. I'm checking it out now.
Well, you did something right. You did a lot of things right, actually. That's a good radio. I had one of those. I gave it to my son, so I haven't seen it in a while. It does like 75 watts out or 80 watts out. That's a really, really nice one. Doesn't get too hot either. I wish I had me another one. But anyway, you got it set up right, your antenna. You got good audio, good signal. You're doing it right. What's your output set on?
Not now. I can put it on medium to check it out if you want.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's see how low you can go before you start losing that quality, because you've got 100% quality right now. It couldn't get any better than you have it right now. Let's drop it down and see where and if you start to lose it.
I just set it to mid, so I think that's 25 watts of power.
Okay, absolutely zero difference between 80 watts and 25 watts. No difference whatsoever. All right, so all you're doing is drawing more juice from your electrical system when you're on 80 watts for hitting this repeater. Now, for hitting other repeaters, that could be different. But for this one, 20 is as good as 80. Drop it again and see how low we can go.
Here at low, which is, I think, 10 watts of power.
Okay, there again, no difference, right? That means you did an outstanding job with your feed line, because you're feeding everything up to the antenna that's coming out of the radio. You're not losing any. You don't have any leaks or losses, and your antenna is set good. It's got a good forward versus reflected wave ratio. So you did everything really good. You can run it on low power, and you're just as good as you are on high power with the conditions that we have at this moment. Now, conditions could change, and it requires you to bump it up a little bit more, but the way the conditions are right now, you're just as good on low as you are on high.
This thing right here could go, it will show in the bottom corner. Right now it's showing low, but if I hit the power button again, it will go low and mid. It's showing those two letters. So, yeah, I can bump it up midway between low and mid right now.
Yeah, and either way. I mean, I haven't heard a bad signal or bad audio from you yet. So everything you're doing so far is the same. I mean, quality-wise, you know, getting to the repeater and then the repeater repeating it. You're just as good on low as you are on high so far.
How happy it makes me to hear you say that, because not only did I have to do soldering, I had to put tips on, I had to...
Well, no need to be nervous anymore, because you didn't get one stray thread of coax, the shielding, right, touching up against the center wire, none of that kind of stuff, or else you wouldn't be doing as good as you're doing right now. You did it just right. Perfect.
I missed it.
It's Whiskey 4 Delta Juliet Whiskey, W4DJW. That's affirmative. Yeah. Do I have Larry? All right, Larry. Well, pat yourself on the back. I would reach through the coax and do that, but I can't. But pat yourself on the back for job well done. You deserve a reward.
The positive feedback, Dave. No, Kilo Oscar 4, Mike Whiskey Yankee out.
All right, have a good one. Relax and a job well done. KO4 MWY, W4 DJW. Clear and listening.
W4 DJW N1 DMB.
N1 DME, W4 DJW. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Dave. This is David in Simpsonville, N1 Delta Mike Bravo. And I wonder if I could get you to give me a signal check on a different rig I've got sitting over in the next room. It's just a little 5-watt QRP rig with a whip on it, but I want to see if it gets out. Can you do that?
Absolutely, no problem. I'm going to be sitting right here. I'm sitting here drinking my coffee, so I'll be here for a little while. Go ahead, take your time. W4DJW, clear and listening.
Dave, N1DMB, I'll be clear, but replying from a different rig. W4DJW, N1DMB.
N1DMB, W4DJW, I haven't heard anything yet until just now. Are you on the handheld now?
This is back to my base. I know that I've gotten out with that little, it's a Yaesu 817. I've gotten out before, but I had it hooked up to a discount antenna upstairs. But apparently it doesn't get out very well with the whip on it. I can hear you all pretty well. I heard you talking to, I think it was Larry, but it doesn't seem to get out.
You are correct. I was listening the whole time. I didn't hear anything until your transmission before last. So nothing from the whip. The disc gun worked good. I remember talking to you on it before, but the whip inside the house isn't quite making it up to the repeater.
Seems to be the case. Oh, well. When the weather clears up, I'll take it outdoors and see how well it can do. In fact, I'll probably try it out tomorrow with the, the light up to 2 meter thing that's going on.
Is that tomorrow? Is that like a lighthouse thing, VHF lighthouse?
About the lighthouse, but it's a VHF thing. I'm fairly new to this game, so I wouldn't know too much, but I've seen notices about it. It's a simplex thing.
Okay. I'm not keeping up with it either. I'm heavily invested into flying radio control airplanes here lately, making airplane parts on CNC machines, so I'm not paying that much attention to HF or VHF ham radio, not like I was before.
Yeah, I heard you talking a bit about some of the aircraft you've been building and the parts that you've been making yourself there. I'm actually in Civil Air Patrol, so I was particularly interested to listen in on your conversations.
Oh, cool. That means you live it. that's good. Or you do. You were living it. You fly any RC or just full scale?
I have not done any RC other than I've got a couple of quadcopters. That's kind of the direction that we've been going for our emergency services. But we do teach RC to our cadets, although, of course, with the last year, with the COVID and all, our cadets have not been meeting in person, so a lot of that training has gone by the wayside. We're hoping to get it started up again.
Okay, so then you've taken the training. You know how to fly fixed wing RC?
I've taken training, and I have never flown a fixed wing RC. I've been out to Triple Tree, to some of the fly-ins, to the Joan Hall, and I've certainly observed some of that stuff. It's fascinating what they do with those things, but I have never handled one of those myself.
Okay, well, that's just another area of a lot of the clubs, in the very, very beginning, when they first started putting escapements on airplanes, that's where amateur radio operator and RC, radio control enthusiasts, kind of crossed paths, and the amateur radio operators were the ones that put the escapements, they put the radio in the airplane. Before that, it was U control or free flight, but amateur radio operators made it so that you can control it with it. And that was a good idea. that idea took off. It got some traction and went really fast. I like doing it just for the fun of it. We used to, around this area, we used to do cross-country races with RC, where you'd set up a chair in the back of a pickup truck or whatever you had, a convertible car or something like that, and you'd have spotters and drivers. And you would race, we'd take off from North Carolina and we'd go down to Highway 417 on the way down to Triple Tree, right about halfway down from Greenville to Triple Tree, and land whoever got there from North Carolina first, from about Hendersonville, North Carolina, down to there. And you did it with one tank of gas in the airplane. So you had to do some planning, but it was a lot of fun. I enjoy them quite a bit.
Now, that I had not heard of that particular exercise, but it sounds like an awful lot of fun in one DMB.
That was a blast. We also had fun flight competition where we would do some really fast maneuvers from ground to ground, from takeoff to landing. And it started around in the southeast and spread from there. And it went all the way from Raleigh, North Carolina, down to Americus, Georgia, and then down into Florida. And then some of the guys in Tennessee were getting into it a little bit, too. So it spread all around. That's called District 5 of the AMA, Academy of Model Aeronautics. But you take off and do this thing called Dixie Death. You take off, you do three loops, three rolls, and three spins, and then you touch the ground, and you go up and do it again. Three loops, three rolls, three spins, and touch the ground, and then the clock is between your first takeoff and your last touch on the ground. A lot of airplanes met their death doing Dixie Death, trying to beat the clock.
I can imagine that would be the case. You know, I am actually a member of AMA. It's just something that I picked up along the way as part of what I do with the cadets and with the CAP and so on. But I hadn't quite ever gotten myself to take the plunge and try to do that. Did you see where the Triple Tree has now got a project? They've built a miniature Piper Cub, and they're embarking on I think it's one of the high school members down there who's embarking on a trip to land it in all 48 contiguous states.
No, I did not see that. I know that they put it off, and then I heard that they put it off again, but because of COVID. But I didn't know that there was somebody working on that. I did. I remember seeing some pictures, I think, somewhere. I think they've got a Facebook page, or somebody's that I'm friends with had a picture of something like that, and they were talking about it, but I never got into the details of what it was they were doing with it. I know it looked almost big enough to get into. It's almost like a half scale or something like that. It's huge.
According to their Facebook page, it's an 85%. I guess that's, it says 165 inches. So I guess that's 85% off and down to 15% size, which would be less than a quarter size, I guess.
Well, I noticed they do a lot of really big ones at Joe Knoll Triple Tree when they have their Joe Knoll event. And I was wondering how they got away with that, because the AMA won't let you have more than 100 pounds, I think, is it? And you can't go over 200 miles an hour. And there's some of those jets that'll do way beyond 200 miles an hour. All right, they'll chew 200 miles an hour up on takeoff. And then in a dive, coming out of a dive, they'll, you know, get close to 300, 400. They're doing really, really good with speed. But I guess what they do is, and the FAA has really made it a whole lot better. We thought they were going to shut us down, but instead you can apply for an exception to their rules. So the weight limit rule, you can apply for an exception to that. You know, for the speed limit rule, you can apply for doing, if they scale the cub up to full scale, right, you can apply for an exception. And if they grant the exception, I think the thing is, they want to know when you're going to do something that's beyond those limits. And it's not like they're going to stop you from doing it. They just want to know what you're doing, what's going on, right, beforehand. They don't want to wait till it's too late. And if it is something you're doing that is going to put people's lives in danger, then they'll step in. So that's really good. But AMA, I think they know about it, those kinds of things. Their insurance coverage isn't going to cover you for something like that. But that's okay, too, if you have the means of covering the insurance. So there's ways to get around the rules. It's not like the rules are the rules and nobody can ever do anything to break the rules. You can apply for exceptions and you can provide your own insurance, stuff like that. So at first I thought with the FAA standing in, it's going to get a whole lot worse, but actually it's starting to get even better.
On that, Dave, with this getting the support, I believe, and support and backing from TripleTree, they're probably going to use the TripleTree insurance in some way. And there's a photograph actually on Facebook that of this thing, and it's actually sitting next to a 165-inch Cub. That's where I saw the 165 reference. But the builder is standing next to it, and his chin, in this picture, the wings aren't attached, and his chin is resting on the top of where the wing roots are. So it's got to be, I guess it's 85% in the other direction, N1 DMB.
W4DJW. Well, that's pretty good. Are they gonna fly it in the air from, like, they can do that now too, as long as you've got a spotter, as long as you're spotting it, the FAA, and you don't fly, you know, you respect the proper airspaces and the altitude for each airspace, then you can fly it like that from side to side. Are they planning to do it that way, or are they gonna, like, put it in the back of a trailer and haul it from side to side?
I don't know for sure, but I suspect they're going to trailer it. But you never know. I'm actually trying to search with my other hand, and haven't been able to come up with an article giving the details yet, but I think that's how they're going to do it.
Well, that'd definitely be a lot easier to do it that way. Find a sanctioned field or something like that, or plan ahead in each one of the states where it is they're going to land and take off. And they probably filed that with the FAA. FAA probably knows all about that and where it is and where they're going, what they're going to do. But that's pretty cool. I think it would be fun to put goggles on, you know, have more than one pilot, the main pilot with goggles on, and then spotters, multiple spotters that are flying to see it. It'd be pretty cool to fly it from site to site. Now, an airplane that big could carry the fuel that would take to get you that far without breaking a sweat.
They originally hoped to have this completed by Joe Nall of 2019, but that didn't happen. And then, of course, Joe Nall itself didn't happen in 2020. But they want to get it done this year, and there's been some talk about at least one of their landings will be at a particular fly-in, RC fly-in, although the name of the fly-in escapes me at the moment.
I'm not familiar with that one either. Do you keep up with the amateur radio operator that flies the balloon that's trying to make a balloon circumvent the whole Earth? Have you kept up with that guy?
So, I have not followed balloons in general until very recently. The aerospace education officer for our unit has been working on a plan where he wants to fly a balloon, and then it started getting support from the South Carolina wing, and then the national headquarters over in Alabama got wind of it, and now they're behind it, so it's turned into a much bigger project than we originally had planned. So, you know, that there's more to come on that.
Well, I'm thinking it's W5KUB. Yeah, that's it. That's the guy's name. I'm on his QRZ page, W5KUB. He's got a lot about talking to astronauts, and they actually have like a thing that's similar to the ARRL newsline. There's several newslines. I think they've got one of them. He's got a Facebook. There's his link to his Facebook page. It's got tons of people following it, and he has pictures of the Earth. And he shows predicted paths of the balloon, the latest balloon that he's flying, and where he thinks it might go because of how high it is and what the jet stream is doing. And then he actually has pictures of where it did go. And then every now and then he has a sad face where the balloon crashed and it didn't make it all the way around the Earth. But that's pretty good to follow. I stop and read those every now and then. Not all the time, but they're interesting reads.
Now that you mention the call sign W5KUB, that does ring a bell, and I think I have been to his page and maybe looked at some of his pictures or read some of his stories, but I guess I didn't quite realize that he was trying to fly it all around the world, N1 DMB.
And that's not all. You know, he's got solar cells on him. He's got He does a lot. Amateur radio roundtable. That's what they call it. They have a roundtable where I guess you can hear it over the internet or on RF on different frequencies. But anyway, that's I find the blend between amateur radio and RC pilot, I find that the blending between the two really, really interesting, because now you've got this huge set of skills on both ends of the spectrum, and it's like there's no limit. There's no limit to what you can do. You can even fly an airplane on Mars. Oh, yeah, they're doing that now.
You know, I had just stumbled across that amateur radio roundtable maybe within the last week, and I heard the one they did, I guess it was last Wednesday night, first one ever. So it's interesting that you bring that up. And as for W5KUV, I think I've seen some of his videos on YouTube as well.
Yeah, he's a pretty active ham radio operator. Pretty cool stuff he's got going on. You can't help but give him some attention every now and then, because he's just got so many irons in the fire, and it's working so well for him. But that's the kind of thing. When I was my dad was an amateur radio operator. The whole time I was growing up, he had amateur radio, and he'd always toss me these books. Get your technician license, get your novice license, get your amateur radio extra license. It just in general, and I would, yeah, Dad, I'm flying, right? My money and my time is going to be invested in flying, and that's what I was always doing. But I always in the back of my mind wanted to know, how does that transmitter that I'm holding in my hand communicate with that receiver, and how does that receiver turn those signals into signals that go to the servos to move the control surfaces to control the airplane? I always really, really wanted to figure that out. And that's one of the motivations behind becoming an amateur radio operator, is to be able to determine, how does that work? And that worked. That paid off. Becoming an amateur radio operator in my 40s, now I know how that radio is doing what it's doing. So that's a lot of fun.
I've backed into amateur radio in a similar fashion. I had been a radio operator in Civil Air Patrol, which was actually kind of a late-in-life retirement project, if you will. But after being an operator there, that got me more interested in ham radio. And I only got my technician license just less than a year ago. I think it was last June. And so now I'm working on going up to my general.
Well, take your time. Yeah, no hurry. But one of the things I did when I was doing that, I'm in my 60s now, so in my 40s when I did that. And one of the things the thing that flipped the switch for me is I was sitting on a bridge in traffic jam. It was nighttime. I was on 85 coming into Greenville. And I had a scanner that I used to listen to, because I went back and forth to Charlotte every single day. I was constantly getting stuck in traffic jam, so I had me a really nice scanner. And I was sitting there on that bridge for 2 hours, and I was fiddling around with that scanner, and I was listening to the CB operators to know about how far the wreck was and when traffic was going to start moving, and it wasn't. And so I was browsing through its menu options, and it had one called HAM, H-A-M. And I said, I know what that is. So I pressed the button, and I heard two people talking on this frequency that we're on right now. And I listened to them for the longest time, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go get my license. And that just flipped the switch in my head, and I went and got my license after that.
Interesting how that works at 1DMB.
W4DJW. Yeah, it is. Anyway, I won't keep you anymore, but your handheld on the whip isn't quite cutting it, but it did do good when you had it on the other antenna in the attic.
Cut out pretty well. It's you know, the disc cone in the attic, which you remembered, got out nicely with the 5 watt. But that 817, I want to use it for a lot more than I've used it for right now. I'm basically stuck on 2 meters. But that's a multi-band. It'll do 6 meters, which I should even try, because that discount I have will do 6 meters. But I want to get a good antenna up so I can try doing some HF.
W4DJW. Well, I didn't realize the 817 had VHF. I thought it was mostly HF and maybe 6 meters, but I didn't realize it had 6 meters and 2 meters on it. That's pretty interesting. I think the 718, its ICOM competitor, there's the 817, the Yaesu version of the 718, the ICOM version. I don't think the ICOM version has 2 meters.
I'm trying to look here. Does 144, of course, the 2 meter, it'll do 50 megahertz, 28 megahertz, 1.8 megahertz, 8500 kil, and 100 kilohertz.
And its maximum transmit power is 5 watts, right?
Then they later on upgraded it and brought out the 818, and I can't remember whether that's 6 watts or 8 watts, but it's still a QRP, a low power rig, but it's nicely portable. And I've got a lithium ferrous, what is that? Not potassium, phosphorus, a LiFePO battery that it'll run off. So the next time Blue Ridge Amateur Radio does a field day, I want to get out there and do something with it.
Recognizing Jerry, that is a good combination. I'm running that right now. I've got a one of those micro track, tiny tracks by Boyonics that's running off of a LiPo, and it can run. It sends out 8-burst beacons, and it can run for just about a week on a 5200 milliamp hour pair. That pair, it'll run 5 watts for 1 week solid, and transmitting every 30 minutes. That's pretty cool. Go ahead, Jerry, W4DJW.
I'm doing well today, David. I don't know the other ham's name. But does the 817 have 440 as well? I know a lot of guys that use a pair for satellite ops.
It's easy for you, Jerry. We're both Davids, so you can't go wrong. Go ahead, David.
Question of 440, I don't recall off the top of my head. It's got a lot more stuff than I've explored so far.
I'm going to run two of them, so you can run full duplex on the linear satellites, especially since it can cover 10 meters as well if you want to get on one of the linear satellites. But I'm supposed it is 440. I don't know. I haven't looked at one in a long time. But they are good rigs. A lot of people use them, that's for sure. And Dave, I was talking to a guy down in Florida not too long ago, and he was... I don't know how in the world he did it, but somehow or another he got an APRS digipede off of somehow altitude balloon somewhere, but I don't remember which one it was. Now, I know they do have APRS trackers on a lot of them, but I'd never heard anybody digipede through one.
Well, that tiny track will do that, and it's built for balloons. The tiny track is in, and it's a tiny track 3, not a tiny track 4. The Boyonics has two of them, the 3 and the 4. The 3 is smaller and lighter and will run off batteries. And it'll run for a week off of 8 AA batteries for 1 week. I don't use AA's because you got to throw them away or you got to get rechargeables, and they're not as amenable to charging as a LiPo. So I just use LiPos on mine. But you can get one of those tiny tracks, 3s. It comes in a little yellow Pelican case. And it you can turn on digipede capability with it, and it will digipede. So that does work good. I was just now looking on Gigaparts at that 817, or 818. I didn't know they made an 818, the replacement for, or this supersedes the 817. I did not know that. I'm not keeping up. That's a nice-looking radio, though. I'm going to have to look into that. They're kind of on the expensive side for a 5-watt rig, but still, they have all the functionality, just not the power. And when you're hiking, you don't need the power, right? You want the low power. You want to throw a wire over a tree limb and get it to work.
All right, that's what I'm hoping to do.
I'm trying to look up its spec. There it is, specifications, to see if it does 70 centimeters.
It displayed for me. I know I've heard some of these terms, but you know an awful lot more about it than I do. I'm still learning. But that's a good thing, that a guy of my age can learn stuff. I like it.
So I just looked up the specs. It does do 1.8 megahertz to 29.7, 50 to 54, 144 to 148, and 430 to 450. So it does do UHF.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have a full duplex, but I know people that run them, you know, just run them as FM, but I've seen a lot of guys stack them, have two of them sitting in a little stack, you know, hanging around the network and working the linear satellites. I don't see how in the world a person can keep up with two dials on the Doppler, shift up and down or some of the things. So it's just, it's hard enough for me to keep up one, W4DJW, and it's a really good rig. And I mean, their A17s, they were on sale not long before the 818s came out. They were very reasonable for, you know, for an all band, all mode rig.
Yeah, well, I thought they were high, but they were like in the $600 range before the 818. I guess the 818 or the 818 took its price range and 817 dropped down a notch. I haven't found an 817 what they cost now. But I don't know if 817s do UHF. I'll go look at them, see what they do. W4DJW.
Do CW, AM, upper and lower sideband, FM, packets, all kinds of stuff. It's quite a sweet little rig.
One thing about the linear satellites is that a lot of them, like AO7s, not necessarily like this, but some of them are where they actually, you go up on lower side band and it comes back down on upper side band. So having two radios or having a radio that's got full duplex in-house like this one I've got, like 9700, it makes it a lot easier to work it that way, because it can track the Doppler separately if you want it to. If you got a rig control or if you get on the dials, you can track it, you know, using two different dials. And that's what reason a lot of people like them, because they're rugged, they're reliable, and they cover everything you need to cover. Plus, you've got one that covers 10 meters, which there's still, you know, still a satellite or two up there people use have a 10-meter uplink too, I think.
Well, Gigaparts doesn't have any 817s. I was still looking around for them. But other people may have them. It looks like the 818 was very popular and probably reduced the demand on the 817.
18 is obsolete now. The one I have, I picked up used, got a fairly good deal on it. It was in really perfect condition, so I'm happy with it.
Does 817 have a built-in antenna tuner in 4DJC for ID?
But this one happened to come with an Elecraft T1 external tuner, N1 DMB for ID.
Then, when the bands open up, that's sick, you know, I'd find some more 6 meters, because pretty soon now, we've already had a couple of good 6 meter openings. It'd be a fun radio with 3 element beam up if you have room for it.
I'm trying things out slowly because I don't want to blow anything up, you know what I'm saying?
It's a pretty, you can go down a rabbit hole in a hurry with this Ivy, I can tell you that. The other Dave can as well. You can start going down a rabbit hole, branch off into other tunnels, and you may never see the light of day again.
This is true. I gotta jump out of here. I gotta put some firewalls on some fuselages. I got to do some gluing. So, anyway, it's been nice talking to you, David. Jerry, always a pleasure. Good talking to you. You guys carry on, and I'll be listening while I'm gluing these firewalls on the fronts of these fuselage parts. W4DJW.
Okay, Dave, see you later. It should be a nice day to fly tomorrow, hopefully. And, David, I hope you have a good afternoon as well, and nice meeting you. My name's Jerry, Juliet Echo Romeo, Romeo Yankee, and I'm on here off and on during the day. I don't go quite as deep into things as the other David does, but got a lot of people got a lot of knowledge on this repeater. It's always good to hear a new ham get involved in it too, especially with a rig like that. You ought to have a lot of fun with it.
Dave and Jerry, I do a lot more listening on this than I do talking, just because that's the way I learn so much. But I really appreciate Dave giving me that radio check and chatting with me. And Jerry, I've enjoyed talking with you. I didn't catch your call. If you could come back and give that to me, please. Over.
November 4, Delta, Juliet, Charlie, N40 JC. And I had that call since 79. When they, you know, for years you had two or three calls, and then all the one by threes were out. And the year I upgraded to technician, they made the one by threes available again and had the end calls were first available. So I was, that's how I got that. And I just hung on to it over the years. Oh, I've been tempted several times to get a vanity call, but I'll do that. I've had this call so long, I don't think I've had a hard enough time remembering this one sometimes, David. I'll say 73 and let you go, and hope you continue to enjoy it. And like I said, just go down the rabbit hole and keep digging.
That I've got a vanity call. I didn't want to come across as a noob. Besides, the N1 DMB came about because DMB, as in many cases, they're my initials. And if I can't remember my initials, I know it's time to hang it up. I'll let you go. The N1 DMB, clear on your final.
For my initials, a time or two with a W and a K call, and neither one of those were available, and I had another one or two with a W or K that I was interested in, but one of them was a friend of mine, who's Silent Keenan. I just didn't feel, I didn't feel good taking that call, although he warned me, he told me 4 years ago that if I ever wondered, he'd rather me to have it than someone else. It's been open now for years and years, but I just didn't feel right doing it. Well, listen, great talking to you, and like I said, you just keep at it. This hobby is like an onion. You just got thousands of layers, and you can go off in all kinds of directions, just keep learning. That's what we all try to do. But I'll say 73, and talk to you later. N4DJC, clear.